This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Shio Kaku, professor of theoretical physics at the City University of New York and host of Explorations, inviting you to join us every week. That's Thursdays from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock p.m. on KPFT-FM. Expand your mind.
KPFT's fall concert series resumes this Sunday at the Miller Outdoor Theater with a program of world music featuring Filipino rock band Kasama, Raga rock band Vani, Colombian folk band Karate, and Congolese pop band Iman Legrand and the Rhythmics, plus the Itaal Sip Reggae Sound System and members of the Music Beyond Borders Collective. The series continues through October 2nd with programs of DJ mixes, blues, progressive folk music, jam bands, Latin music, and Texas music, hosted by KPFT programmers. That's KPFT's Fall Concert Series, 3 to 6 p.m. Sundays, co-sponsored by the City of Houston and the Miller Outdoor Theater Advisory Board.
Pacifica
Radio. Anasotra Pacifica
al KPFT 90.1 FM
to
Houston.
Unasikiza 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Yawan hai Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Oh hi Pacifica Toy Kissing Sea.
Chaliye, aaj hum sab mil karke is dharti pe shanti ke liye prarthna kare.
Tum to mun nahi le shuthat. Chaliye lang dao de. Biet. Junto la Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
一同向和平進發, 我們是侯司長的 Pacifica KPFT 90.1 FM 90.1.
Mimi ni Pacifica, uhuru wa mazungumzo kwa watu walio huru.
Hum taqat ke samne bhi sachai se bolte hain. Hum hai Pacifica Radio KPFT 90.1 FM.
Let's all get together and pray for the peace on earth.
Ahlan wa sahlan and welcome to Arab Voices on Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored commercial-free KPFT, 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston, and live broadcast on the internet at kpft.org. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host Mark. Tonight, our guest will be Diana Bhutu, advisor to the Palestinian technical team on Israel's evacuation from Gaza. Ms. Bhutu will be joining us live from Gaza City, and we will talk with her about Israel's evacuation after 38 years of brutal military occupation. We will also take your calls live, so please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. But first, let's start with Arab Voices Community Calendar.
The Houston Coalition for Justice Not War is organizing a car caravan to Crawford, Texas, to stand with Cindy Sheehan, the mother of a young man who lost his life in the Iraq War. Sheehan is holding a highly publicized vigil outside the Bush Ranch in Crawford, waiting for an answer from Bush as to why her son had to die. The organizers expect to depart from St. Stephen's School on Sol Ross and Woodhead at about 8 a.m. this coming Saturday, August 20th, and arrive in Crawford around noon. To join the caravan or for more information, contact Robert Graham. The number is 713-528-0677.
Flint Leverett, Senior Fellow at Saban Center for Middle East Policy at Brookings Institute and author of Inheriting Syria, Bashar's Trial by Fire, will be coming to Houston to talk about Syria and our current administration's Middle East policies. Houston World Affairs Council is sponsoring this event, which will be held on September 1st at 6:30 p.m. at the Junior League, located at 1811 Briar Oaks Lane. On Wednesday, August 31st, Mr. Leverett will be live on this show discussing the U.S. Middle East policy. For more information, visit www.hwac.net.
The bilateral U.S.-Arab Chamber of Commerce is hosting this year's U.S.-Arab Economic Forum. It'll be held September 14th through the 16th at the Hilton Americas Hotel in downtown Houston. The forum is geared towards those interested in business and policy decisions spanning the region. Top leaders from various industries, including energy, financial services, healthcare, information technology, trade, and tourism, will be at the forum to discuss business opportunities and how to use business as a bridge to build stronger U.S.-Arab relations. The event is co-hosted with the Arab American Chamber of Commerce of Detroit. For more information, visit www.usaeforum.org.
The Council on American Islamic Relations, CARE, will be holding its annual banquet on September 24th with the theme American Muslims, Partners for Equality, Promoting Community. This annual banquet will be held at the Western Oaks, located at 5011 Westheimer Road at Post Oak Boulevard. For more information, visit www.carehouston.org.
The Arab American Cultural and Community Center in Houston holds its 10th annual Unity and Friendship Gala on Saturday, November 12th. This gala will be held in celebration of a decade of achievement for the ACC, and it will be held at the Marriott West Chase at Briar Park. For more information, contact the ACC at 832-351-3366.
And if you missed any of the announcements we just made, or for more information about them and many other events and activities scheduled in Houston, please visit our website at www.arabvoices.net.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask about the apartment on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented. Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Khalid bin Ali, and I am calling about the apartment you are renting on Park Street.
No longer available. Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim, call 800-669-9777. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCC-REF.
Coming up next, Arab Voices News Summary.
Iraq witnessed today yet another bloody day under the U.S.-led military occupation that killed 54 Iraqis. At least three car bombs detonated in the Iraqi capital Baghdad today, killing 43 people and injuring more than 70. A fourth separate attack in the northern part of Iraq killed 11 more Iraqis. The three car bombs exploded just minutes apart at a bus station in the nearby and a nearby hospital in Baghdad during the morning rush hour. Six other Iraqi soldiers assigned to protect oil pipelines were also killed today. Today's attacks were the bloodiest in Baghdad in recent weeks. The British Independent newspaper reported today that the number of dead Iraqi civilians counted at the Baghdad morgue hit 1,100 in July, the highest toll in recent history. The Independent said the figure was just 700 short of the total number of U.S. soldiers killed in Iraq since April 2003. The paper also reported that by comparison, equivalent figures for July 97, 98, and 99, during the leadership of former Iraqi President Saddam Hussein, were well below 200. Some estimates out there put the number of Iraqi civilian casualties during this war at considerably over 100,000.
The latest attacks in Iraq came 2 days after politicians failed to draft a new Iraqi constitution by the Monday deadline, prompting the Iraqi parliament to give politicians another week to complete the new charter. Iraqi Prime Minister Ibrahim Jaafari and other politicians downplayed the crisis, and Jaafari told reporters, quote, "The demography of Iraq and its complicated political map should be taken into consideration. The delay was for 1 week only, and the pending points do not need a longer period," unquote. Meanwhile, Munzer El-Fadhal, member of the Constitution Panel, said Tuesday, quote, "This is a one-time extension. If Iraq misses the next deadline, we have to dissolve the National Assembly. The government will collapse and fresh elections will have to be held," unquote. He also added, "There are serious differences on issues like the sharing of national oil wealth and the demand of self-determination from the Kurds."
An Israeli settler opened fire today at Palestinian civilians near the West Bank colony of Shiloh, murdering 4 Palestinians and wounding several others. The Israeli settler was transporting Palestinian workers from Shiloh industrial area to go home when he shot dead 2 of the workers in his car at the time. He then ran into the industrial area, killing another Palestinian worker on the way and wounding 2 others. One of the wounded Palestinians died late this evening at a hospital. The Israeli settler is from the colony of Shutra'el, north of West Bank city of Ramallah, one of the many illegally built colonies on Palestinian lands.
Back in 1967, Israeli forces attacked the Gaza Strip, West Bank, and East Jerusalem, and has been occupying these areas by force in full defiance of international laws and United Nations resolutions. Over the past 38 years, Israeli occupation forces have been confiscating Palestinian lands by force in the Gaza Strip, West Bank, and East Jerusalem, demolishing Palestinian homes, razing Arab lands, and then bringing Jewish settlers from around the globe and giving them the Palestinian lands it took by force. There are thousands and thousands of Palestinians who have been evicted by force from their lands in order to give the land to the Israeli settlers. Well, as you know, Israel has decided a few months ago that it will unilaterally evacuate the Gaza Strip and end its colonial presence there. Over the past few days, Israeli settlers who have been living illegally in Gaza for the past 38 years began to evacuate the Gaza Strip, and those who refuse to evacuate are being removed by force by the Israeli soldiers. We will be discussing this in more details with our guest in a few minutes.
Yesterday, Israeli settlers attacked Palestinian homes in the El Mawasi area west of Khan Yunis in the Gaza Strip. Hundreds of Israeli settlers stormed the El Mawasi area, attacking Palestinian homes and ransacking the homes and their belongings. On Monday, Israeli occupation soldiers held Bashar al-Khadri, a 23-year-old Palestinian, in a hole dug by the Israeli troops manning a military checkpoint, with both his hands handcuffed for 2 hours under the scorching summer heat, leading to his fatal death while he was going home, returning from the Al-Najah University. On Sunday, Israeli occupation troops shot and wounded 4 Palestinian children in the West Bank city of Hebron. And that is the end of the news for tonight.
We will take a short break now, and when we come back, we will talk with Diana Bhutto, advisor to the Palestinian technical team on Israel's evacuation from Gaza. Ms. Bhutto will be joining us live from Gaza City, and we will talk with her about Israel's decision to evacuate Gaza after 38 years of brutal military occupation. We will also take your calls live, so please make a note of the phone number. It is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT. Welcome back to Arab Voices on Pacifica Radio, listener-sponsored, commercial-free KPFT, 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 FM in Galveston, and live broadcast on the internet at kpft.org. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices, along with my co-host Mark. Shortly, we will be joined with Diana Boutu, advisor to the Palestinian technical team on Israel's evacuation from Gaza. She will be actually with us live from that city that has been the center of all media outlets and all countries over the past couple of days, talking about the Israeli evacuation of the nearly 8,000 illegally living Jewish settlers in Palestinian lands inside the Gaza Strip. While we are connecting to Ms. Diana Boutu in Gaza City right now, let me just give you a quick background. Gaza City, by the way, is the entire Gaza Strip is the most densely populated area on this planet. It has 1.3 million Palestinians living there and 8,000 Israeli settlers. The 8,000 Israeli settlers occupy 35% of the entire Gaza Strip. That land belongs to Palestinians. The Palestinians were living there for years before that, before Israel occupied it by force in 1967. And since then, they have been demolishing Palestinian homes, evicting Palestinians living in their homes by force, and in many instances actually demolishing the Palestinian homes on top of their residents, killing several while inside their homes. And Israel has been bringing Jewish settlers from around the globe, from the United States, from Europe, from Russia, from Africa, and giving them the land that belongs to the Palestinians after evicting the Palestinians by force. So in essence, what we have now, the Israelis that are evacuating the Gaza Strip, for those who have been monitoring the local media or the national media, it makes it sound as if this land belonged to Israel always. And now, all of a sudden, Israel is giving up this land to the Palestinians, maybe in a good gesture, trying to make peace. What was interesting is there was very rare occasions when we had anybody referring to the situation as an occupying power leaving an occupied area. There was no mention in many of the local news media coverage or the national media coverage. As a matter of fact, there has been extensive coverage of the Israeli evacuation of settlers from Gaza, but from a side where it's showing as the Israelis are the victims in this case, giving up land, giving up homes that they have been working hard for and building for 38 years, when in fact that is not true. These settlers, which are fully armed, they have been living there illegally for 38 years by force. Israel has been taking lands and acres of lands around the Israeli settlers to what it calls security buffer zones and so on. We're obviously having technical problems. We've connected with Gaza a couple of times and we've got disconnected two times in a row. So we will continue to try to get Diana Boutu on the phone and hopefully she will join us shortly. So there has been no mention of the suffering of the Palestinian side for the thousands and thousands of Palestinians who were forced out of their homes, who lost their homes. Palestinians who have worked hard their entire life to build a house, and then Israel would come in overnight, demolish the home, take it, consider the area what they claim as a closed military zone, and then give it to Israeli Jewish settlers and build on it, expand it, take more buffer zone, more miles around it, demolish more Palestinian homes to secure that Israeli settlement, and then say it's naturally growing, so we're going to take more land. And that has been the Israeli method for many, many years, since 1967. Not just in the Gaza Strip, but also in Jerusalem and the West Bank. There are dozens of Israeli colonies in the West Bank, in Jerusalem, and in the Gaza Strip. The total population of the Israeli colonizers is approximately 420,000 living illegally on land stolen, taken by force by the Israeli soldiers from the Palestinians.
Zaid, I think we have her. Diana, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, good.
Okay, excellent. Diana Boutu is the advisor to the Palestinian technical team on Israel's evacuation from Gaza. She's also legal advisor with the negotiations support unit of the Negotiations Affairs Department with the Palestine Liberation Organization. And she has previously served as legal counsel to the Canadian Department of Justice in Ottawa. Diana, welcome again to Arab Voices.
Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. I know it is 6:20 a.m. now, Gaza time.
It is.
Give us, please, information on the latest situation on the ground there. Where do we stand now with Israel's evacuation of settlers from the Gaza Strip?
Well, more importantly, we received word late last night that a fourth Palestinian...
Diana, can you hear us?
That's happened four times now. I'll give it one more try and see if we can get it back on.
All right. In the meantime, I'll try to give you more information about what's happening in Gaza right now with the Sharon's decision to unilaterally evacuate settlers from the Gaza Strip. What I was mentioning before we connected with Gaza is that there are 420,000 Israeli settlers living in Palestinian lands illegally. Illegally, that means this land was taken by force and the Palestinians were expelled from that land by force to be given to Israeli colonizers. And then Israel would build house, more homes and more homes and more buffer zones and enlarge it. In the West Bank, it's more complicated, actually, than the Gaza Strip because they have colonies throughout the West Bank. And they have been building the apartheid wall around those Palestinian towns and villages, keeping some Israeli settlers away from it, and basically ending up with Bastion kind of Palestinian areas there, almost going to make it impossible to have a full independent Palestinian state. And we have her back, I believe, on the line now. Diana, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Sorry.
Okay, we don't know what's happening. We keep get disconnected. But go ahead, please. You started to tell us something about from last night.
Yes, we ended up finding out that a fourth Palestinian died as a result of the acts of the settler terrorism. And, of course, the Israeli government, although they've arrested the settler, has in the past done nothing to prosecute or protect the Palestinian population. So so there's a great deal of fear that is currently existing on the ground. Other than that, the settlements themselves, particularly the ones in the Gaza Strip, many of the settlers had begun to leave well before the major drama that Israel tried to show yesterday, and very few actually remained. And we're now being told that more than half of the settlers have actually, the actual settlers, more than 90% of the actual settlers have been evacuated, but about more than half of the people have been evacuated because many people came from other parts of occupied territory to come in solidarity with the settlers there. So our estimates are that this whole process in terms of the settlers will be over within the next few days, and then we'll begin to see the dismantlement of the military infrastructure that has taken up so much of the land of the Gaza Strip.
Let me back up a minute and ask you a question. It was interesting to hear the Israeli Prime Minister Sharon and the Israeli media calling the terrorist act, which is in fact a terrorist act by the Israeli Jewish settler when he murdered four Palestinians, that was a Jewish terrorist who committed this. And he said it before that a couple of weeks ago when another Israeli also shot randomly in a bus and killed several Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
How is that different than the Israeli soldiers that are killing Palestinians on a daily basis for the past 38 years? And we won't hear an answer to that now, but we'll try to connect again. Please bear with us. That's out of our control. We don't know why we keep losing the connection. What we would like to do is we'd like to get you engaged probably earlier. I can see several people are trying to call and be on hold, and get you to speak directly to Diana and take advantage of the time we have with her before we get disconnected. Once we connect her on the line, again, there are so many questions to ask of Diane about the Israeli disengagement from Gaza, or what the Israel is calling it that. The Palestinians are calling it the evacuation from Gaza. They are not considering it liberation. They are not considering it a freedom for the Palestinians yet, because Israel will continue to control the borders, will continue to control the seaport, will continue to control every source of exit and entrance to the Gaza Strip. Israel already announced that it's planning to build a wall around the Gaza Strip, in essence making it the largest prison on this planet, with 1.3 million Palestinians living inside. And not to forget that Sharon has threatened many times and continues to threat that we have the right at any time to go inside Gaza or to bomb Gaza or whatever we want to do. So people there obviously are living in fear. They do not feel a sense of security yet. And they do not know what's coming up next. Israel has been making decisions on its own as if there are no peace partners whatsoever. It still stands in violation of over 72 United Nations resolutions. And despite their evacuation from Gaza, Sharon committed today in a speech to the Israeli on Israeli TV that he is committed to building more settlements in the West Bank, and he is committed to holding on the Israeli colonies in the West Bank. Jerusalem has a huge presence also of Israeli colonies. Israel has confiscated that, and they are making it as part of the greater Jerusalem area. So that is still an interesting part to watch and see what happens there. There are many people out there who say that this is a good first step. You know, 35% of the Gaza Strip is going to be freed and is going to be given back to the Palestinians. I personally believe that is a good step, you know, when you take back 35% of the land. However, it is not the ultimate solution, or the problem is not over yet.
Okay, we're trying on a cell phone line, and we'll see if that one holds up a little bit longer than the landline.
Diane, you're with us again?
Yes, I am.
There's a little bit of a delay on this line, but Diana, just before you got cut off, I think Saeed was asking you about the difference between the Israeli settler who shot and killed three or four Palestinians and was called a terrorist by Sharon, the difference between him and the Israeli soldiers who randomly kill Palestinians, including children, sometimes even inside the United Nations schools. What is the difference from your perspective?
There's absolutely no difference, and this is a problem that Palestinians have been living with now for several years, particularly as the word terrorism and terrorists became very sexy and very, you know, very commonly used. It sort of seems in the eyes of many that once you put on a uniform, you're no longer a terrorist, but unfortunately that's not only not the case, but that's when there's an obligation to make sure that you actually protect the population is when you have your uniform on rather than better when you don't. So you know, Sharon had to call the two settlers terrorists. But of course he would never do the same when it comes to calling the army, who's carried out much more acts of terror. He would never call them terrorists.
Diane, what happens next? Now, Israel is going in the next few days, you said it's going to finish evacuating the Israeli settlers from the Gaza Strip. That means it's going to free up 35% of the Gaza Strip land. It's going to be given back to the Palestinians. Is Israel planning to demolish the homes there and the whatever it has been built in the Israeli settlers? And when does the Palestinian Authority physically take control of that area?
The process is going to be a very long one. The first thing that the Israelis are going to do is they're going to begin to demolish the homes immediately, and in fact they started yesterday. The demolition of the homes is going to take some time. It's going to take about 3 to 4 weeks, because the way that they're doing it is they're trying to They're trying to render the homes completely useless, and they're going to be removing any hazardous materials from the houses. So it's actually going to take a while before all of the houses are demolished. Many of the houses had asbestos in them, and so we've demanded that the asbestos be removed before anything can be done with the rubble. So the actual process is going to take some time. The dismantling of the military infrastructure is also going to take some time. And while it's begun, and it's begun several months ago, I think that the entire process is probably going to take about 1 month. Now, what will remain is public buildings. The Israelis have decided not to demolish public buildings and telecommunications lines. But I have a feeling that there might be some damage, obviously, to the infrastructure once the Israelis actually begin the real process of demolishing the homes. The Palestinian Authority expects to be given the land and take control over the land sometime in October.
Okay, and I would like to mention here and emphasize that those Israeli settlers that are being evacuated from the illegally built colonies in the Gaza Strip, they're actually being, and correct me, Diane, if I'm wrong, they're actually being given housing somewhere else in Israel, and they are also being compensated up to, what I've heard, $300,000 to $400,000 for being moved from Gaza. And Israel has asked, or is going to ask, the United States for $2.2 billion, of course, from our tax dollars here in the United States, to cover that cost and to pay for it. How much?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Not only are the settlers being compensated for moving out of occupied territory, but they were given incentives to move into occupied territory, and their incentives were given on a yearly basis in order to encourage them to stay in occupied territory. So for example, on the Gaza Strip, some of the prime real estate land is actually, you could purchase a house for very, very minimal sums of money in the Gaza Strip. At one point, houses right off of some of the best shores in Khan Yunus were going for roughly $2,000 for a three-bedroom home. And this was because the Israeli government was trying to encourage people to move into occupied territory. In order to encourage them to move out, they've also been heavily compensated, not only for their homes, but also for their businesses, and they've been provided alternative housing. Now, at the same time, Israel's still providing incentives for Israelis to move again into occupied territory, particularly in areas in the Jordan Valley, where settlers are still receiving heavy sums of incentives to move in there, and in the greater Jerusalem area as well. So yes, they've been heavily compensated in terms of coming in, heavily compensated in terms of coming out, and further incentivized to move into occupied territory, particularly in the Jordan Valley and the West Bank.
Once that the next step takes place and Israel fully evacuates the settlers from the Gaza Strip, isn't Israel will continue to control the entrances and exits and all the borders, the seaport and the air over Gaza?
Yes. It's important to keep in mind, and a lot of people keep forgetting this, that there were two processes that Israel engaged in over the course of the past 38 years. There was a colonization process, which involved, obviously, the expropriation of Palestinian land, the confiscation of Palestinian land, the construction of Jewish-only colonies in the area, Jewish-only roads, and so on and so forth. So that was one process. The second process is that of military occupation and that of military control, which means controlling the access and egress, controlling the airspace, controlling the water. Now, the first process is now over in the Gaza Strip, but the second process still remains, and a lot of people keep collapsing the two ideas, but they should be separated. So while the settlers are out, the colonization of the Gaza Strip has now come to a close, the military occupation, that military control is still remaining, and there are no indications whatsoever that Israel is not going to continue the stranglehold over the Gaza City, even following its evacuation of settlers and soldiers.
You're listening to the voice of Diana Bhutu, advisor to the Palestinian technical team on Israel's evacuation from Gaza. She is joining us live from Gaza City. We are taking your calls live, so if you have any questions for our guest, please call us now. The number is 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT.
Diana, I wanted to ask you about the way the Arab media has covered this. We don't have an awful lot of easy access to the Arab media here, but the impression that I've gotten from watching the U.S. media is, this land is Israeli and the Israelis are being thrown out by their own troops and shouldn't we feel sorry for them, etc., with really no mention of the history of how they got there and who was living there before they arrived. I'm assuming, of course, that, Palestinians aside, that the majority of Arabs understand the history of the region. What do they make of the way the Israelis are reacting to this, what is being portrayed almost as an internal crisis that is somehow not connected to the Palestinians?
Well, I would hope that the Arab media would cover it in a different way, but unfortunately, I don't think that there's this high level of awareness in the Arab world any longer in terms of the Palestinian cause and the Palestinian struggle for freedom. It's something that you would expect to be a natural process, but Arab media has largely disintegrated over the course of the past few years. We've seen both its rise and its fall. The rise, obviously, with news networks such as Al-Jazeera and Al-Arabi, but definitely its fall with competing networks such as video clips and music and so on and so forth. So viewership is actually dropping in terms of news media in the Arab world and on the rise when it comes to entertainment media. That said, the coverage that has been coming out of both Al Jazeera and Arabiya and the other news networks has been by and large, interesting, in that you are actually seeing a great deal of discussion with respect to, as you put it, the internal dynamics with respect to Israel. But obviously, they're putting it more in terms of a historical context. That said, nobody whatsoever, in terms of the Arab media that I've seen, has focused on the historical context of all of this, and nobody knows more about what it's like, about eviction and forced eviction, than Palestinians who, in 1948, 75% of whom were forcibly evacuated from their homes and sent not to a country that they had full citizenship, but became refugees where they continue to languish now 58 years later. So there's been no real, that has been completely put absent in terms of the Arabic news media. It's something that instead everybody goes for the pictures and for the instantly accessible, instantly digestible information, but nobody's really putting it into a historical context.
One just very quick follow-up question before we get to our callers. Our phone bank is full. If you try and get through and you hear a busy signal, then just keep trying. Do you think that this reduced awareness among a younger generation of Arabs has something to do with the reduction in importance across the region of pan-Arabism and the rise of individual state nationalism, or is that too general a question to consider?
That's clearly one of the results, and I think beyond one of the results, it's not only the issue of pan-Arabism and the decline of pan-Arabism, but it's the rise and the support and interest in Western media and pretty much all things Western. People get tired of hearing about politics and death and destruction and so on and so forth. And so it's not at all surprising that during the period of the war in Iraq and what's been going on in Palestine, that viewers have actually turned away from their television and news media and instead have sought refuge in entertainment media and rather than actually focusing on what's happening on a day-to-day basis. I think it's largely because people feel helpless. They have no real way of influencing. And so if you have no real way of influencing them, then why simply ruin your mood by watching? So I think pan-Arabism and the decline of it is certainly one of them, but I think there's other factors as well.
All right, let's give our listeners the opportunity to ask questions. And as Mark mentioned, the phone bank is full. And we're going to disconnect you after you ask your question in order to free up the line for other callers. The first caller is Nabil. Nabil, you're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hello?
Good evening.
Yes, go ahead, please.
I noticed on the news some young girl, Israeli girl, maybe she couldn't be more than 12, 13 years old, saying, you know, that this is our land and we want it back. And it's just a terrible thing to leave. I also understand on the Israeli Knesset is written that Israel, your borders from Euphrates to Nile. So how does that play out? What does the withdrawal from Gaza mean if their borders are going to expand from Iraq to Egypt? I haven't heard of them renouncing that claim. If you could say something about that and the mindset of the Israeli people over there, especially the next generation. Thank you.
Thanks for calling.
Mark, can you repeat the question? I had a very difficult time hearing it.
He was asking basically what the sense is at all of a withdrawal from Gaza if there hasn't been a renunciation of the Israeli claim to Eretz Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates. Is that something that Israelis still talk about? Is it still an official claim to the greater Israel?
No, people are generally not talking about the Nile to the Euphrates, but at the same time, Israel has yet to define its borders, and this is, interestingly, the first attempt to define its borders, and I should say that even the evacuation from the Gaza Strip, Israel's still going to not only remain in control of the area, but it still is not fully evacuating from the Gaza Strip itself. There's a kilometer and a half to the north of what is currently the Erez crossing point that is actually Palestinian territory. So it's rather interesting that even though they're evacuating, they're still controlling. But although nobody's really talking about the Nile to the Euphrates any longer, actions on the ground speak very differently. We're not talking about going into other countries any longer, although Shabbat Farms is still occupied. But they are still talking about, obviously, speeding up more of Palestinian territory by building more and more and more settlements. And in the minds of Israelis, I don't think that they quite that they see a difference in any way, shape, or form in terms of Israel and in terms of the settlements themselves. So many Israelis, some of them will say, yes, I know the settlements are wrong, and so on and so forth, but I don't think they quite have a sense of not only how wrong they are and just how many settlements there are and how much of the land that Israel is actually eating up. So while nobody's really talking about the Nile to the Euphrates any longer, nobody's actually talking about the 67 borders either.
And just a piece of fact, which was mentioned briefly, Israel is the only country that has no defined borders. 713-526-5738 is the number to call and ask our guest, Diana Butu, questions about the Israeli evacuation from Gaza. Diana Butu is advisor to the Palestinian technical team on Israel's evacuation. She's joining us live from Gaza now.
Can I jump in with a quick question? Diana, will Israel continue to hold the access and rights, not legal rights, I guess, but access to the water in the Gaza Strip? What's the situation with the water once this withdrawal is complete?
The coastal aquifer is something that we've been in ongoing discussions with the Israelis now for several months. The water aquifer itself is the only aquifer that runs through the Gaza Strip. And because the Israelis have not allowed the Palestinians to repair it over the course of the past 38 years, it's actually very failing, and the aquifer itself is largely damaged. So the water in the Gaza Strip is actually very, very, very salty. You can taste it. You can taste the salt. You can smell the salt. It's not at all pleasant. And I was born and raised in Canada, and the water level, the water salt level that people, Palestinians actually drink, is actually deemed too salty to grow corn in Canada. That's how salty it is.
So there's been ongoing discussions with the Israelis about what, about the fate of the coastal aquifer. And now that the Israelis are actually evacuating the area, I'm hoping that we'll be able to repair that coastal aquifer. But at the same time, I think that the damage is probably irreparable, and the Palestinians are going to have to start looking into all, other water resources in order to be able to maintain water consumption. We've already grossly underconsumed water here in the Gaza Strip, and I mean, it's you know, less than the minimum standards specified by the World Health Organization. And as I said, the water is far too saline. So the real issue in terms of what's going to happen in the future is yet to be decided. While the Israelis won't control the actual aquifer itself, a lot of repair needs to go into it in order to make the water healthy.
All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call. Let's go next to Mohammed. Mohammed, you're on there.
Yeah, good evening, Saeed. Good morning, Diana.
Good morning.
Sharon is still building settlements in the West Bank. On what basis he's doing that, and who's giving him the green light to do this and the funding? The other question is for them to move out of Gaza Strip. They're going to be asking the United States to pay almost, like Saeed said, $2.5 billion, and I see that as just further victimizing for Palestinians and Americans as well. What are we going to do that to clarify that to the administration that they need to do something about this, especially the settlement issue in the Palestinian territories? Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Mohammed. Diane?
Again, Mark, it's if you could just briefly repeat
sure.
the questions. I have a difficult time hearing them when I'm asking questions.
Okay, he asked a couple of questions. He was asking about the West Bank settlements and colonies. Sharon announced that he's going to hold on those settlements and even increase them. His question was on what basis or who gave Sharon the green light to do so. And the second question about the $2.2 billion that Israel is asking the United States to pay for the cost of evacuating the settlers from Gaza, if you could elaborate on this.
Sure. I'll take the second question first. You know, Israel's occupation and colonization of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip has been some of the most, in my opinion, the most fascinating colonization that's ever existed in the history of mankind. And the reason that it's most fascinating is, unlike any other colonization that's or occupation that's existed in the history of mankind, this is the only one where the colonizer or the occupier provided absolutely nothing to the colonized and occupied people. So if you think of other contexts around the world, if you think of India, if you think of South Africa, if you think of Algeria, there was always something that the occupier or the colonizer provided to the colonized or the occupied peoples. And there's always, they always built infrastructure and all that sort of stuff that perhaps wasn't good, but they always did it. And it's interesting that Israel has never done this to the Palestinians, and largely because they don't believe that the Palestinians have a right to exist. Much of the policies have been trying to get Palestinians to force them off the land rather than to keep them there, which, of course, is an act of resistance to the fact that so many Palestinians have stayed. And so so along that same lines, what the Israeli government is doing is it's seeking compensation, or what it calls compensation, for actually getting out. And in other words, rather than it, because it now needs to invest in the Palestinian population, it needs to invest in access and egress, it needs to invest in repairing the coastal aquifer. Because it now is required to do all of that, it simply can't get itself to do that and is now seeking the funds from a third party, namely the United States. So it's very funny and very interesting to watch the psychology that's going into place behind this entire evacuation process. Many of our discussions with the Israelis during this period of evacuation have been largely in order to obtain money from the international donor community. They needed to look as though they're actually cooperating with the Palestinians in order to get money from the donor community. And really, rather than cooperated, they were cooperating with the Palestinians. They were simply dictating to the Palestinians the terms and conditions of their own imprisonment. And for that, they're getting very hefty sums of money. With respect to the ongoing colony expansion in the West Bank, on what basis are they doing it? Power. Nobody has ever stopped the United States, Israel from actually carrying this out. Israel has been put on notice now for the past 38 years that its colonies are illegal. This is why I don't feel sorry whatsoever for the settlers who are now being evacuated. They knew that they were there illegally. And yet, although Israel has been put on notice for the past 38 years, nobody's done anything to stop Israel. They haven't withheld funds. They haven't isolated Israel from the international community. There's no sports boycotts. There's no product boycotts or any of that sort of stuff on a mass scale by the international community. And here I mean countries, not individuals. So they continue to do this simply on the basis of power and because they can. Unfortunately.
But also President Bush said in April of last year that things on the ground are different and that basically Israel can continue to claim on those settlements because it's increasing in size. Isn't that directly a green light to Israel? You can build and do, and a year or two or three from now when we talk about it, things on the ground are different, so you can keep what you have.
Well, see, that's the failure. It's the internal logic failure, which is basically the United States government is saying, yes, the settlements are illegal, which they have said they are illegal, but if you continue to build, we will recognize them. So all that it really does is it encourages Sharon to further expand, because the bigger they get, the more that they will be recognized and the more that they will be facts on the ground, and then they become Jewish population centers rather than actual Israeli colonies, and that's the change in terminology. So again, that's the breakdown in the internal logic on the part of the United States government and on the part of the international community as a whole. The United States may actually say it, but the international community as a whole has also done very little to stop the Israeli government from expanding these colonies.
Okay, next on hold is Hazem, and then after that is Phil. The number is 713-526-5738. Let's go to Hazem now. Hazem, you're on there.
Hi, Saeed. Hi, Mark. Hi, Diana.
Hi, Hazem.
Hi.
Can you hear me well, Diana?
You're going to really have to speak up because I can barely hear when it goes to your question.
All right, I'll try. First of all, I watched your interview earlier today with Jim Clancy on CNN. I thought you did an outstanding job. He tried to interrupt you over and over, but you held strong and got your point across. Thank you.
Thank you.
My question is, and forgive me if I didn't hear the answer earlier. Well, I'm not getting good reception. My understanding is that the settlers who are moving out of the settlements in the Gaza Strip are actually going to settlements in the West Bank. Is that correct?
Some of the settlers are moving to the West Bank. Many of them, as I said, are being incentivized or given incentives to move to the West Bank. Some of them are not for the time being. I think that the ones who are moving to the West Bank are obviously the ones who, for ideological reasons, wanted to live in occupied territory, believe in the whole concept of Eretz Israel, Greater Israel. But those who are not are simply the ones who are been accepting financial compensation. As I said earlier, they were incentivized to move into occupied territory. They're now being incentivized to move to the housing that they've put forward to them inside Israel. And I think the vast majority are actually going to end up simply accepting the compensation packages and staying in these different housing projects in what is Israel, rather than moving to the West Bank. That said, that the incentives to move into the West Bank are still very, very, very high, and it's not surprising that we continue to see more and more and more Israelis move into occupied territory.
And the compensation packages you mentioned, they range, from what I've heard, and correct me if this is wrong, from 100,000 to 400,000 plus per person. Is that about right?
It's roughly the correct estimate, but beyond, there's even things that are beyond that, which is a reduction in their income tax. There's even housing loans that they're getting at cheaper rates. Many of them have had their businesses double compensated, not just compensated, but double compensated. And beyond the monies that are going there, there's also compensation that is being provided to them for jobs and for other activities that were businesses in the sort that took place in the Gaza Strip.
And this includes people who have only just recently moved there. I mean, there were interviews earlier on the BBC and CNN of U.S.-born Israeli citizens who had just moved to the Gaza Strip within the last few months, and they are going to be receiving, you know, these $100,000 to $200,000 to $300,000 to $400,000 checks to move. And in several cases, they were going to get rent-free housing for two-plus years.
Yes, and this is precisely the problem with the whole system, is that, you know, similar to the system that I was just talking about earlier about the United States encouraging people to move into, encouraging Israel to expand the colonies by saying, well, you know, we'll eventually recognize it, it'll become a Jewish population center, and so on and so forth. It's that same failed internal logic that Israel's using, which is now it simply encourages settlers Israelis to become settlers, to move into occupied territory, because they now know that they're going to be given incentives to move in, and they know that they're going to be given incentives to move out. And the vast majority of settlers, as we know, are not there for ideological reasons, but for financial reasons. And it's upwards of 70% of the settlers are there for financial or quality of life reasons, which is better hospitals, better schools, and so on and so forth. So it's, again, an internally failed logic.
All right. Our next caller is Phil. Phil, you're on there.
Hi, all.
Go ahead, please.
Hey, everybody. But
good morning.
Why should we really care about this so-called pullout? You see, I don't see why we should even discuss it, because Sharon is the one who wants the world to think that he's doing something good. You will be rewarding him by discussing it. From my understanding, Gaza represents less than 5% or 1% of occupied lands. And so the pullout is really of no consequence. Yet, given the publicity which all the corporate media are giving it now, and unfortunately, we have also fallen into this trap, it becomes a significant move by Sharon. You know, you see all the displays in TV of crying and, you know, and Sharon taking the blame and saying, blame me or whatever. You know, it makes him look like a hero.
Okay.
That's a good point. Diana, do you want to respond to that? Are we giving this too much coverage? Does it even count?
I didn't hear it.
Well, he was saying basically that you know, the media, KPFT included, has fallen into the trap of giving this issue so much attention that Sharon has gotten what he wanted by looking like a hero who's given, you know, a big gesture towards peace.
Yes, I mean, this is one of here's the Israeli media machine at its finest.
Are we making the same mistake by talking about it?
No, I don't think so. I think that if you talk about it in an intelligent manner, then and put it in its proper context, then I think it's obviously something that should be discussed. This is the first time that Israel has actually evacuated settlements in occupied Palestinian territory, and so I think it is important to discuss. But I think it's important to put it in its proper context, which is, this is approximately 1% of occupied Palestinian territory that Israel is evacuating. It's less than 2%. Of the actual number of settlers. So we're really talking about drops in the bucket in terms of land, and a drop in the bucket in terms of the number of settlers. And yet the Israeli government and the Israeli media machine has managed to portray this as such a huge concession on the part of the Israeli government. I think that when you put it into its proper context of, as I said, 1% of occupied Palestinian territory and 2% of settlers, you begin to realize just how this is really just a drop in the bucket. And This is part of Israel's long-term strategic interests, and has very little to do with concessions, which, of course, Sharon has indicated in the past he's never going to see a Palestinian state come to fruition.
Exactly, and we've been emphasizing throughout the past 60 minutes that this was a brutal military occupation that took the land by force from Palestinians, demolishing their homes, evicting them, and it's not as bright as the Israeli media and the other corporate media, like the caller said, has painted for the Israelis, but it has been a tragedy, a catastrophe for the Palestinians for the 38 years. And it's not over, unfortunately. We are out of time. Diana Bhutto, advisor to the Palestinian technical team on Israel's evacuation from Gaza, has been our guest tonight, joining us live from Gaza. Diana, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sai. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you very much for being with us, and thanks for being patient with the phone difficulties.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we appreciate
thank
that. Thank you. We are out of time for the evening. This is Saeed, producer and host of Arab Voices. Many thanks to my co-host Mark and Charles for taking care of the call-in center. Until we meet next Wednesday, peace on earth.
August 20th, KPFT will ask for your support. It's our one-week summer sizzle pledge drive. You can help make it even shorter. Many are receiving a letter in the mail asking for you to help put the pledge drive into overdrive. How can we do that? For every $1,000 raised, KPFT will deduct an hour from the pledge drive and get you back to the radio you love. By pledging early, you help shorten...
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.